So yesterday we dealt with the issue of women's chiyuv and the chiyuv of ketanim. And again, we went through the range of possibilities. Either they're independently chayev, or the other extreme, they're not chayev at all, right? You just have to make sure they're happy, maybe for the mood in your house. And then all the middle positions, that they are chayev, they're not chayev in karban, but they're chayev in the subjective actions. Or they're not chayev in the actions, but they're chayev in reaching the emotional state. Or you're chayev to bring them to that emotional state. And with ketanim, you have to ask the added question, which is it from the general type of chinuch, which might be on the parent or might be on the child? Is this localized to simcha, etc.? Okay. So let's look at two gemaras before we really flesh out this idea that we've been talking about of kiyum balev. One, the Gemara in Moed Katan, the other Gemara in Pesachim that I sent out to you, okay? So, the Gemara in Moed Katan, just gave you a small part of it, but sets out a very important principle, which is, Avel eino noheg aveluto baregel. An avel does not mourn on Yom Tov, right? In fact, it's more than that. La'alacha, we paskin that it knocks off avelut. Right, so if, I don't know if you've ever been to. Have you ever been to an Erev Yontif funeral? These are crazy things, right? Right. So Erev Pesach is the craziest, but right. So like an Erev Pesach funeral, what happens? How does it happen? Yeah, but so you missed what's the most dramatic about it. Is you go to so 1 second, Moed Katan. But what happens is you go to the funeral, right, and then they sit Shiva for a few minutes at the cemetery, maybe a few minutes at home, and then they get up and it's done, and there's no more avilut. It doesn't pick up again after Chag; it's over, right? They have halachically, they have to be happy 3 or 6 hours later. It's a crazy experience, right? This is correct. No, if someone dies during Yom Tov, it's different. Then avilut starts afterwards, right? Meaning if it is already Yom Tov when someone dies, then the avil doesn't take effect until it can take effect. Correct. Yes. Apparently, I think it was the Rav that someone went, right, that he used to talk about how all of mitzvah could be a sacrifice, and someone asked him, but how about some Simchat Yom Tov? And he gave this case, right? Even sometimes being happy is a challenge, is a sacrifice, right? Because then you don't want to be happy.
I think you could think of it as perhaps as a proof to the fact that all that matters for some pleasure, your objective
Well,
actions.
no, that's what we're going to see in just 1 second. Good, but Kobe asked the right question. He didn't say it as a question, but we'll see in just 1 second.
How is it clear if the commander expects you to be?
Oh, and that was exactly the Rav's point, is that the Torah does demand such things. But 1 second. So the Gemara says, So here the Gemara's formulation is quite formal, which is, if the Avelot took effect before Yom Tov, so then, the mitzvah of the Rabbim, because Simchat Yom Tov is viewed as a communal mitzvah in the sense that everyone is chayav at the same time, v'dachi aseh d'yachid, and it overrides the positive commandment of the individual to be mitabel.
It's kind of crazy because, like, the way Simchat works is you still have a personal obligation for your family, but you're not obligated. Like, it's not like a relationship, which is that we're all doing the mitzvah together. I mean, we are, but everyone has their
So
own
interesting. Fear. So I had this thing when I was in Toronto. So when I assume most of you have been to Shiva houses at some point.
Yes.
Yes. So, but what happens between Mincha Maariv and Shiva houses usually? Not usually the Shiva. What? And not usually between Chamariv. Well, that's a great thing to happen, to be able to sit Shiva. But often what will happen, and this shouldn't happen, right? Or not necessarily, is what? Is that people will learn. What's the problems? You're not allowed to learn, right? What are you allowed to learn? What? Things that are relevant to Avelut. Very good. So there's actually a machloket, right? Some people, the machloket Rishonim. Some Rishonim think that you can't learn anything. And some Rishonim think you can only learn things that are kosher to Avelut, right? So when I was asked to go and speak at a Shiva house, so some people, you'll go to some Shiva houses, and I don't really understand where this comes from. People will like talk about things that are more like musari, like Perek Yavot. I'm not sure where that comes from, why that's mutter. So I was very insistent that if I spoke, I only spoke about There's about like 10 Mishnayot that you can speak about in all of Shas that are not impossible to understand. You're allowed to talk about like Tumat Mate and stuff like that, but I wasn't going to do that. So I would talk about these same Mishnayot in Moed Katan and in Brachot, and I would, when I would get to this halach, I would often talk about this idea, which people tended to find powerful, this idea that, no, right, we rejoice, and we rejoice as part of a community, and therefore there is a cost to that, right? There's a benefit to the fact that we're embedded in communities, but that also means that sometimes your individual experience has to bend the communal.
It's not like a chiyuv derabim, meaning...
What? So that's the question. Is it a chiyuv derabim, right? And that's part of the lumdus here, is what does it mean? Is it just that it's everyone's chayav, right? Or is it...
Everyone's chayav, like in... Everyone else's mitzvah in some
way? Well, right, so that's the question. Is it a communal? No, you have communal mitzvah.
Like,
what?
Wouldn't it be a bit like now, I've already been like, you know, what if you don't know, like, when you're...
No, so that obviously you can do. Just the halacha of what you need to do, right, that's different. That's not usually called limud. That is a different status, right? So the same way, like, if I was in a bathhouse, right, where you're not, right, Gemara's bathhouse, you're not allowed to learn Torah, you are allowed to answer a shiloh that's relevant then, right? Right, so like if someone's in, you know, in the bathhouse and he asks a halacha that is relevant to the bathhouse, you're allowed to answer. Right, you're not allowed to explain. You're not allowed to say why, but you're allowed to say yes, no. Right, or right, if there's a brawl in the bathhouse and someone says, "Am I allowed to punch him in the face?" You're allowed to say no. Right, you don't start explaining. Oh, it's an issur d'oraita. You don't do that, but you're allowed to say no.
You have to.
Yes. The nature of the chiyuv is very interesting, but yes, fundamentally yes. Okay, so the Gemara sets out this principle, right? That avelut overrides simcha. So now, if I ask you, what does that mean? What does it mean that avelut overrides simcha? What would you say? What does that mean? Why? That's right, simcha overrides avelut. That it, why? Ah, so Eitan just said, well, you can't be both. Now, what are you implying by you can't be both? The what? But why? What are you implying about it? By saying what you said, there's a key word there. There was a word there that was magical and also very dangerous, and that was?
Yeah.
What, there were two, it's two letters.
B.
B. What are you implying?
Right,
that you're implying that it's about a state of being. Because if you thought that avelut and simcha were both just actions, so why not? Why can't you say that the person has to sit on the floor and eat meat? Right? Or if it's just about actions and the emotive part, right, the affective part, is not relevant. But you're allowed to have meat during avelut. An avelut is allowed to eat meat. Right? They're not in right? The actions are not contradictory. You can sit on the floor. And if on Yom Tov, someone wanted to sit on the floor, right? What if someone wanted to? Right? What if someone is really good at yoga and they just love sitting for hours and hours in the weirdest poses on the floor, right? To show theirs. And while, but they also are big meat lovers. So they sit in like some bizarre, like, yes, they exercise in a full split while eating a shawarma. Right, I don't know. People do weird things. People have hang-ups. I don't know. Right? Are they allowed to do that on Yom Tov? Mistama. Right? So if you really thought that Simcha and Avelot were reducible just to actions, and that the effective component is not relevant, then this halacha doesn't really make sense. Right? Okay, fine. Right, so if you say, well, the bus of the carbon, and that's different, you're right. But nowadays, you would say... Okay. But remember we saw the Pesach Dorot who said the reason you have wine is to wipe away your sorrow. It'd be great. So what you would say is during a velut of Yom Tov, you have to do both. Get shikur right away, then you'll be happy, right? I mean, you could come up with weird construals of this.
Yeah.
Right. But the simple pshat is what Eitan said, is that no, this shows you that at some level, right, the emotional component is important. Now, whether that's because the emotional state is the mitzvah, or it's the kiyum mitzvah, and in this case, the kiyum ha-mitzvah actually shapes at some level the letter of the law also. However you want to formulate it, the fact that the affective component is integral to the both avelut and to simcha, and therefore they are intention, seems to be the simple pshat that emerges from this gemara. But the Rav pointed to a second gemara that made this even clearer. Okay? And that is the Gemara on Pesachim Ayin Aleph. Okay? Because the Gemara on Ayin Aleph, what does it say? Who got to the Gemara on Pesachim Ayin Aleph? What did the Gemara say? The Gemara says, Lema Messiah Leva Yita Achsamech La Rabot Leila Yom Dava Achar on the Simcha. The Pasuk tells you that the last night you're still Chayv in Simcha. Ata Omer Leila Yom Tava Acharon Eino Ela Leila Yom Tava Rishon. The Gemara says, how do you know that the extra word, Vayita Achsamech, is teaching you that the last night you're Chayv in Simcha? Maybe it's teaching you that you're Chayv on the first night. So what does the Gemara say? Tamud Lomar Achale. No, divide. It excludes something. So my time alam yishum de ein bo ma me yismach. Don't you say that the right? The Gemara says maybe it's a technicality, right? Which is you don't have anything to be happy with. Why? Because the simcha is the karban, and you bring karban during the day, so you're bringing it tomorrow. Lo kedetani time amari de la rabat leil yom devarachon lo tzei leil yom devarishon. So the Gemara says no. The logic goes as follows: marbe ani leil yom devarachon she simcha lefanav. Thank you. I exclude or I include the last night of Yom Tov because it is more joyous, because it is preceded by days of joy, as opposed to the first, which isn't. Okay? Fine. Now, there's a problem. Here's the problem that drove the Rav's analysis. When does Avelut get knocked off by the Mitzvah of Simcha? Starting the beginning of Chag. Right? Starting the beginning of Chag. When does the Mitzvah of Simcha apply according to this Gemara? During the day. So what should you think? That you have to sit Shiva at night, and that it's the morning that knocks it off. And therefore the Pesach, the Erev Pesach funeral that Zeriker talks about, how should it look? You go to the funeral and then you sit Shiva through the Seder, right? You sit on the floor and have your matzah. You sit on the floor and have your arba koso and your maror and whatever, right?
And then you're saying that afterwards you would start.
And then in the morning, right? Because if you think that the mitzvah of Simcha only applies during the day, and it's the mitzvah of Simcha which knocks off Avelut, so then Avelut should still, right now, this hangs on another sugya that I don't want to get into, which is Avelut Laila d'oraita or not? Okay, I don't get too much into it of whether Avelut Laila is d'oraita or not, right? But it's complicated. But this is what drove the Rav's problem here, which is, I don't understand. You just told me that the mitzvah of Simcha is what knocks off Avelut. But you told me that the mitzvah of Simcha doesn't apply till the day, so why is Avelut knocked off at night? So, someone tell me. So, give me a possibility. Yes. In general? Yes. I mean, you can. Often they'll go to sleep. It depends. In the winter, that's prime time, right? When sunset is like 4:30, when do you think people come and sit Shiva? In a Hanami, if you're in Norway in the summer and sunset is like 2 in the morning, mistome, no one even made it to Maariv. Mistome, right? Like early Shabbos, like my parents went on vacation there a few years ago, and like early Shabbos is like 1 in the morning, you know, like when I was looking at that, right? So it's not just Pesach. Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos, whatever. So, but it's the mitzvah of Simcha, right? It's not matzah, it's Simcha. Right. So what are you going to say? So tell me, so what possibilities do we have?
That the kiyum hum of actually being happy needs to be predicated by certain actions, which But if you, so necessarily to fulfill the kiyum later on, you cannot predicate it with actions that would bring down.
Or put it differently. So you're saying, oh no, I can't do something at night that's going to make me sad during the day. Why don't you just say it much straighter?
The kiyum doesn't exist without the action beforehand. Therefore, the night before, since you didn't have done the carbonos yet.
So then why is Avila knocked off? That's the question. Why is Avila knocked off?
There's no kiyum to feel anything because you haven't done the actions yet.
No, so then that you then you should have Avila at night, but you don't on the first night of Yom Tov. That's what I'm asking you.
You can't go from the feeling instead of being happy.
So you could do it as a technicality, right? Right? But based on what we've been saying, what's the... So you could go with this, I think, in a few directions. One is to say what the Gemara means there's no simcha till the day is primarily the karban. Right? But maybe some secondary things do apply at night, right? Or more fundamentally, right, you'll say, listen, maybe it's true that the actions are limited until the day. But, as we talked about, by Simchat Yom Tov, there's the actions and then there's the Kiyum Balev, right? And maybe at night you have the Kiyum, but you don't have the Kiyum of the actions, but you do have the Kiyum Balev, and Avelut has actions that you do, but again, maybe by Avelot as well, what's central? The Kiyum Balev. And if, in the end of the day, the actions of Avelot and the actions of Simcha are both, in the end of the day, expressions of, as Eitan said, the importance in both mitzvot of being happy or being sad, then even though the actions don't necessarily contradict, the states of being do, the state of being takes effect already at night. Because the express, because that would imply that you're in a state of being, right? The actions are meaningless without the kiyum,
right? So,
right, meaning to tell you to sit on the floor and not, but you can't be happy or you can't be sad, right?
So
that's not avilut. Avilut, the actions are an expression.
The expression of the being, whereas in terms of simcha, the actions are to bring about the state of being.
Why is the
Well, does it? We've pointed out several times.
You should eat the korban and then
yes, but how many times have we seen in the Gemara where it's not clear? Bamem misamcho, right? We talk, right? When we talk about, we've seen that the language is not clear that way, right? It has subjective language. It has emotive language, right? Emotional language, right? That's the point, is that we've pointed out, give me one second. Hold 1 second, okay? Look just for a second at number 7, okay? I didn't give you the rub inside. Because, like I said,
So, in terms of positive emotions, we need the entire point of Torah is to bring you towards positivity. However, in terms of avilut, the entire process of avilut is a way of dealing with negative emotions.
Right, that's exactly the point. Right, is that if you think that both avilut and simcha, the actions are just means to getting to a kiyum, that the kiyum malev here is the central part, and the actions are just expressions. Right, that this flips it. Right, that by most mitzvot, the maisa is central and the kiyum is secondary, and by avilut and by simcha. The fulfillment, meaning what it's doing to you emotionally, is primary, and the actions are mere expressions of that,
okay.
Right? Then the identity are in conflict even before the maisa takes effect.
All right, so
right?
If you have a father that, or a parent or sibling that you hate it.
Ah, so this is what Avi said. So the answer is it may not matter, because it may be that you're obligated to feel sad. Right? That you're obligated to feel sad. Right? That's not true. No. See, this is where I disagree halachically. Where the chinuch makes this point. He says, "Unloktit aveh," right? Don't desire. Not the second version, the one in Bat Chanan. He says, and maybe you'll ask me, how can you do that? How can you command someone? Right. Let me just read it for you. 1 second. 1 second. Well, that's exactly what the halacha does seem to demand. So that's the question. Is at some level halacha does seem to demand this, right? That at some level halacha does seem to demand being able to control your emotions. Let me just get it. One second. Say for Achinuch, 4:16, if I remember correctly. Please let me be right. Yes. Shalom le'davot. So he says, "V'al titma lomar." Don't be shocked. Ve'echi yebi ado shel adam limno levavo mehamita avot el otzar kol klichem dashir b'shul chaver. How can you control your desire to that want? You know everything your friend has. V'hu mikulam reik v'reikam, and you have nothing. Ve'ech tavia Torah miniyah v'mashiyev shar lo adam amor lo. How can the Torah command that which you can't do? He says shezed davar enokim. That's wrong. V'lo yomru oto. Don't say it. I'm sorry, this wasn't directed at you. I'm just quoting, okay? It is not about Avi. Zulati hatipshim haraim v'chataim v'nafshotam. Only these stupid, evil people who sin in their souls. Not you. Ki ha'amnam b'yad adam l'vino atzmo ma'chshav t'avadavim kol ma'shir tzeh. You can prevent your thoughts and desires. Now, maybe sadness and happiness are a little bit different, but his point is, Rishuto v'daito l'archik l'karev chetzo b'chol dvarim keretzono v'libo meser b'yado. Your heart is given in your hand al chol asher yachbot yatenu v'ashem asher lefanav kol ta'alumot. He says, you don't believe me? He says, God knows all. Koveh kol chedrei baten. He looks inside your heart. Roeh kol yedav alev, etc. And he made this command, right? So take it up with God, right? That's basically... So, but at some level, the answer is yes, you are obligated to control your emotions.
Because God looks into your heart and says you could, if you interpret this right. Like he's preaching his...
Meaning, he has no problem saying that lo titaveh is an emotional command, because he thinks that God does command us to feel in certain ways. That's wrong. That's not true. That's not true. That is an overstatement. No, Avi.
You can convince yourself of things.
It's an overstatement. It's an overstatement. That's an overstatement. No, that's not true. That's not true. First of all, that's not true. It's not easy, and it's not always possible, but it's not impossible to control emotion. Right? And that is exactly the point. That's an overstating the case.
Rabbi, would it be unfair to say that doesn't mean you can't be sad at all, like you have to be completely happy?
Ah, so the question, good. So then you have to get into, well, what if, right, what does that mean? Does it mean that if I have at any point like a twinge, right? Right? Probably not, right? Meaning most people, dafka on the chagim, let's say, right? Unless you always had chag with your parents or grandparents or whatever, right? Right? So, achar me'er esrim, when that's not the case anymore, dafka around Yom Tov, it's a bittersweet, right? Like, I don't think that twinge of like, oh, I wish, you know, Bubi, whatever, was still here making her matzo ball soup. I don't know, whatever. Right? I don't think that that's what we mean, right? But there's feeling, there's fleeting emotions, and then right, we can talk about what it means emotionally. Does it mean to not feel a twinge of pain? Does it mean to not dwell? Right? Does it mean right to dwell? Right? But right now, in general, I will point out that you know that much of modern you know, a lot of modern psychological research really does think that you can affect the way you think and feel based on how you act, right? It's much more, right? Like, at some level, right? Again, we can talk about exact shiurim in emotions. I mean, we can't. But you want to, you could do that, right? But at some level, but like, one second. Like, this is the difference between, like, Freudian psychology, psychological treatment, and CBT, right? Cognitive behavioral therapy, right? Where Freudian thought is basically everything you have to get at the root. And until you get at the root, nothing will ever change, right? Where cognitive behavioral therapy is, right, notes that a lot of times affecting the inner world is brought about by changing the actions, right? The bad patterns that emerge from that, and that actually helps. You don't have to solve the emotional thing directly. Right. If you change the way you act, that can help you shape your inner world. Okay. Right. Which, of course, by the way, parenthetically, is why, you know, this is, you know, I'd heard several people said it. But if you really want like a treatment on this in Yoni Rosenzweig's new book on mental health and halacha, he does have a few pages devoted on it. Right. He said that is one of the reasons that he thinks that poskim let's say 50 years ago, were much, much less open to talking about mental health was because the dominant voice was Freudian as opposed to CBT, where halachic language, right, Freudian, where I'm going to get into your mind and, right, I have to get to the, you know, whatever, and then you have the risk that the psychologist or the psychiatrist is, you know, imposing his own worldview and telling you why you feel what you feel, right? That's much different from that's very dangerous from a halachic perspective in a way that CBT is not, right? CBT to say that, listen, whatever's going on in your mind, we can help you by changing the patterns of action, right? And that action will affect the way you think and we'll do this and we can judge this clinically, right? We can say, like, statistically, people who change their actions a certain way, it brings about right results. That type of language is much more amenable to halachic dialogue. So again, I'm not telling you necessarily that what halacha means is don't feel anything, right?
Less depressed, you have to get. I just don't think that within a single day you can go from being
very
sad to
being
happy.
That's not true. That is not true. That is not true. Okay, Avi, one second. Okay, raise your hand if you have ever had a day, right, where in the same day you've had deep pain and deep joy on the same day. Right. Often that is what you have at funerals, right? It's sad, right? Especially an elder. Look, right. Correct. Especially like older people, right? Where like, it's sad, but it's, right? 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 You're bringing extreme case. I'm going to leave it for a second. But for 1 second. People can be really, really sad they lost their grandparent. But often, right, that meal, like after the funeral, when you go back and it's just like, you know, the kids and grandkids and nieces and nephews and whatever, and they're like reminiscing, is also deeply joyous in like a, you know, they're not necessarily in conflict in that way, right? You're right. You're like bringing me not just sad. What about clinical depression? Or, right, now, the truth is that even in such situation, leave clinical depression, right? We're, right, fine. Extremely traumatic events, right? It's harder, right? Admittedly, loss of a child, right? Something like that. Yes, that's much, much harder. Right, but the point is that it's not leaving aside someone who is clinically depressed, where maybe it's not possible, right? Like maybe there actually has to be whatever. I'm going to leave that aside. I'm not going to weigh in because I'm not an expert, and I'm not going to weigh in on whether it's possible to do that, right? But naniach it's not, right? Naniach meaning let's assume. Sorry, it's Hebrew, right? Let's just assume. Right, let's assume that clinical depression not. But even radical traumas, right? It's not necessarily the case that you can't force yourself to feel some joy. Now, I'm not saying halacha necessarily thinks you can't have any pain. I understand the complexity here. My point is that it's not this all or nothing, right? Giving me the extreme and saying, well, that person is not able to doesn't mean that that's not possible, that halacha doesn't demand you to try. If you fail, you fail, right? That happens, right? No one would say, right? No one would say, like...
You weren't happy on Yom Kippur.
No, leave that for a second. No one would say, oh... There's a mitzvah to blow a shofar, but the person is deaf, right? And therefore, it can't be that there's a mitzvah to hear the shofar, because there are people who can't do it. I mean, no one would say that, right? They would say, so this person can't do it. That doesn't change the fact that if someone was, let's say, hard of hearing, you would say, well, he can't hear it from the back of the room, right? So go to the front. Right, you wouldn't say that because there's the person who literally can't do it. That means that even for the people it's hard, we don't demand it. Right, so I'm saying even if you want to assume that there are people for whom they can't, they're clinically depressed, it's a medical condition, they can't actually be happy. Fine, let's say that's the case, but that doesn't mean that, like in Kobe's case, someone's really sad their grandfather died. But like, just like there's that joy in that meal after the funeral where you're reminiscing. So let's say it happened to Erev Pesach. So maybe what you would have to do is muster the courage to make the Seder, that meal where, yes, it's going to be twinged and bittersweet, but to make it more about, let's celebrate Zadie's legacy, right? And let's say his favorite Divrei Torah at the Seder, right? Right, you understand? So... No. So that's where I disagree with you, is I think that just because you can come up with an extreme case... doesn't disprove the theory. I don't think so. You can deny that. Look, we've talked about in the sugya that you can deny that this is the mitzvah. I'm fine with that. You can deny there's lumdus. I'm fine with that. Right? You can say that, no, this is just a series of actions. You're chayv to act happy. You're chayv to act sick. You can say that. My argument is simply you don't have to say that. Just because it's hard doesn't mean it can't exist this way. You cannot buy the lumdus. I'm fine with that. Right? I'm really totally fine with that. Right?
I could agree that there's a mitzvah to be happy. I just think that there are times where if you're not happy, it wouldn't necessarily be an affair. You could try it.
Oh, fine. Like I said, but that's the same thing where I'm willing to buy that. The same way I'm willing to say that someone who's deaf, right, the fact that someone it can be deaf doesn't prove that the mitzvah isn't to hear the shofar, right? Right, so like, right, I'm willing to say there's a case of anus, where the mitzvah you'd be happy, and, you know, but if you really, 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 really can't, right, then you're anus. There is such a category of anus, right, which is an inescapable, right, coercive situation. It's possible. I wouldn't say to someone who's like clinically depressed, right, you weren't happy, you're not capable of being happy, you violated an Israel. That doesn't change the fact that the mitzvah might be to be happy, but the same way we can recognize that there are exemptions from mitzvah because people physically can't do something, so we can say there could be exemptions from that people can't emotionally do something. I'm willing to say that and not give up on the fact that fundamentally the mitzvah has an emotional component, yeah. Right? I'm willing to say that. Fine. I'm willing to buy that. The question of where you draw the line, how much happiness is happiness, how much sadness is sadness, and how impossible does it have to be for you to be happy to be considered patur, I'm not going to weigh in on that, right? There are literal experts in the world who focus on that, right? Right now, the reigning expert is really, you know, like, is like Yoni Rosenzweig. Like, he has, you know, yeah. He spoke here before your time, 2 years ago. Two years ago. What? Nephew. Yeah, so he's basically, very, very briefly, guys, if you're interested, big adult, guys, you know, sort of brackets, right? Yoni Rosenzweig has recently written a book. He worked on it for like 3 years with Dr. Shmuel Harris, who's like the head of psychology or psychiatry at, I forget where, somewhere in Israel. And they co-wrote this book called Nafshi Bishelati. The English translation is done. It's not yet published. It will be soon. From following his Facebook posts. No. It's about mental health and halacha. Right. It's about mental health and halacha. Other people have been doing a lot of work on it in the last years. Right. Turchina in Toronto has been doing a tremendous amount of work on it. Maybe. I mean, this is, you know, one of my goals over the summer was reading the book carefully. No. Like Nafshi B'Shelati. You know, what? I did read it in Hebrew. Yes, I did read it in Hebrew. They are almost finished with the translation. I think I even donated money to the translation. He was crowdfunding for fun, like to get money for the. I'm pretty sure I donated money to the translation. I don't know because I thought it was important. No, God no, God no. First of all, he is much more qualified to translate it than I am. Right, like he speaks English perfectly, and like he grew up here, but he speaks English perfectly. Like his parents are Anglo, so like if he had wanted to do it himself, he could do it. But no, he hired a professional translator. It's a whole skill. I hate translating so much in Hebrew. Nafshi b'she'ilati. He also started an organization to deal with mental health and halacha and stuff like that. Yes, Mr. Zariker. That is a fascinating shot. Yeah, I don't know.
Then would you change your opinion on it? Because one could say that with the cases of extreme swap, if that happens, you make quarter of people can actually achieve.
Right, so that's an interesting question, right? Both on whether, meaning, look, the question is whether that shofar would be good, right? A shofar that can't be heard.
Well, the shofar had to be heard.
Yeah, but it's not. Right, but it's not. Right, meaning if you could come up with a case, right, meaning I would flip it and say if you had a shofar that was so high pitched that most people could hear it, my question would be, does that count as a call? Right?
Rather when it's
yeah, but you're asking a theoretical. I don't have a model like this in halacha. Meaning, I understand your model, but I'm not sure there is such a model.
I'm saying that
I understand what you're claiming about this, but I don't have any model in halacha that I can think of that says what you're saying that I can figure out what that would mean. In this circumstance, an interesting question. And back to your question, Mordechai, I can try to arrange for him to be a guest speaker. He did a few years ago. Two years ago or three? I don't know. Basically, during lockdown. During lockdown, when guest speakers were on Zoom, it was much easier. And he gave a guest cheer for the guys on mental health and halacha. It was, yeah. Well, at the time, we were both teaching it at Amudim. Right, because he taught at Amudim, and right, that was when Amudim was still here, and I was still walking there on Thursdays to teach. So he spoke here.
Okay.
So let's take this and let's. So I gave you Rav Chaime Navon's article. In general, Rav Chaime Navon is or Rav Chaime, as people who know him refer to him. But Rav Chaime Navon. Is a very, very clear writer. He lives here in, somewhere in Modi'in. I don't remember where. I think in Bochum, but I'm not really sure. But I gave you his English summary of it, so let's just read it in case you're getting lost. Here's a good summary, okay? As a rule, even when halacha is and he also, this article is about showing the methodology of Rabbi Soloveitchik in general, so he draws out how this is a very classic approach of the Rav to many, many different mitzvot, and he includes this translation of Vikashta Misham, that where the relevant piece is, right? The Rav makes this argument in like random places, in a footnote of Vikashta Misham, which is a philosophical work, and in the middle of Shir Mozeh Chavamari. So as a rule, even when Halacha is interested in stirring up certain emotion, it relates directly only to formal actions and not to conceptual aspirations. Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik argues, however, that this is not true with respect to the mitzvah of rejoicing on the festivals. Rabbi Soloveitchik bases his argument on a Talmudic passage in Tractate Moed Katan, which explains why mourning practices are not observed on the festivals. Right? This is the Gemara we just read. Yes? That a mourner does not conduct himself in accordance with the laws of mourning during a festival. For the verse says, you shall rejoice in your festival. If it is a pre-existing mourning, the positive precept pertaining to the community comes and supersedes. Yeah, that was the mitzvah say. Yeah, comes and supersedes the positive precept pertaining to the individual. And if it is mourning that was to begin now, the positive precept pertaining to the individual does not come and supersede the positive precept pertaining to the community. Okay, that was the Gemara we read. Good. The Gemara asserts that a festival sets aside the observance of mourning practices because rejoicing on a festival, which is the mitzvah pertaining to the entire community, supersedes the mourning, which is the mitzvah that is restricted to a particular individual. The characterization of these mitzvot as pertaining to an individual or the community is of great significance. It would appear that the distinction between these two does not relate to the number of people bound by each of the mitzvot. Even if the entire Jewish people were relatives of the deceased, the mitzvah of mourning would still be deemed as pertaining to an individual. The Gemara seems to distinguish between mitzvot performed in the privacy of one's homes and mitzvot observed in the public arena. Right, that's one possible difference, right? One Ravening Gemara, that it's literally about Sibor versus Yasin. Rabbi Soloveitchik, however, focuses on a different point. And now this is the quote from the Rav. At first glance, the words of the Gemara require explanation. Why can't a person observe both mitzvot mourning as well as rejoicing on a festival? Surely a mourner is permitted to eat meat and drink wine, and where is it written that on a festival a person is forbidden to remove his shoes or abstain from washing, anointing, greeting people, and the like? The answer to our question is obvious. The mutual contradiction between mourning and rejoicing on a festival does not relate to the practical observances of mourning and rejoicing. The external practices do not contradict each other, and they can coexist. The contradiction lies in the fulfillment of the mitzvah of rejoicing and mourning in their very essence. The essence of rejoicing is a spiritual act, joy of the heart. Similarly, the nature of mourning is a spiritual attitude, grief in the heart. The Torah commanded that heartfelt grief must dress itself in a tangible form of mourning practices, and that heartfelt joy must be symbolized by the partaking of sacrificial animals. These acts, however, are merely the means through which a person fulfills the mitzvah of rejoicing and mourning in the heart. With regards to rejoicing and mourning in the heart, there's obviously a mutual contradiction. Hence, the festival comes and supersedes the observance of mourning. And then, as to the point that I made before, so Rabbi Soloveitchik brings additional proofs in support of his position that with respect to the mitzvah of rejoicing at a festival, it is the feeling of joy itself that constitutes the essential fulfillment of the mitzvah. Thus, for example, Rabbi Soloveitchik cites Tosfot, who asked why Shabbat counts towards the 7 days of mourning, even though public acts of mourning are not observed on that day, whereas a festival day does not count towards the 7 days of mourning, even though, according to most Rishonim, private acts of mourning are in fact observed then, and a festival day is only excluded from public acts of mourning exactly like Shabbat. He asks, the implication is that even according to the opinion, the mourning practices are not observed on Shabbat. Shabbat counts towards the 7 days of mourning. If so, regarding a festival as well, even if mourning practices are not observed, it should count, right? So the Rav takes it from a different angle, which is why if on Shabbat you only do Avilut in private, right, on Yom Tov, so why is it that Shabbat counts towards Avilut and Yom Tov doesn't? You could just say you'll mourn in private. And he answers, if you skip down a line, even though Shabbat counts, a festival does not count for on a festival, there is no mourning at all, because regarding a festival, rejoicing is mentioned. Whereas Shabbat, it's not. Right, that's Tosfot. Now, what is his answer? Next paragraph. What is Tosfot's answer? A festival does not count towards the 7 days of mourning, because on that day, there can be no fulfillment of mourning. This is because the festival obligates rejoicing that contradicts mourning in a most essential way. On Shabbat, however, it is only because the day obligates honor and pleasure that the practical mourning rites cannot be observed, right? So he says, Shabbat, you have to do acts of enjoyment, and therefore, you don't publicly mourn, but does it uproot the mourning? No, because on Shabbat, it's acts of enjoyment, right? But on Yom Tov, right, it is the essence. So now if you look at the next paragraph, right, Soloveitchik proposes here a principle that is prominent in his entire outlook regarding the reasons for the commandment, as well in his Talmudic discourses. Joy of the heart is not merely a result of the mitzvah of rejoicing at the level of a reason of the commandment, right? It's not tamei mitzvah, rather it is the mitzvah itself. There are certain mitzvah whose essence involves an internal feeling, or in Hebrew he calls it a kiyuma mitzvah, even though they may have some external expression. When we discussed the fundamental principles of halacha, we mentioned halacha's tendency to translate vague and fleeting feelings into solid deeds. There are cases, argues Reis Soloveitchik, in which feelings are also included in the realm of halacha proper. In such cases, halacha enjoins a specific action that gives expression to the amorphous feeling. The action is the act of the mitzvah. The fulfillment of the mitzvah, right, this is Maisa Kiyum, however, is achieved through the feeling in the doer's heart. Rabbi Soloveitchik's novel distinction between the mitzvah's act and the mitzvah's fulfillment gives new perspective on the various circles relating to the fulfillment of the commandment of rejoicing on a festival. Right, we can now update the diagram of the circles we have drawn. The outermost circle, hazy and undefined, contains the feeling of joy. Halacha mandates that we consolidate that feeling and express in it some concrete action. As we move inward, we are to make use of the specific act of partaking of meat and wine, or each person befits him according to his age and gender. In the innermost circle, we are to rejoice by eating meat of the Chagigah offering. We are dealing here not with chronological development, and certainly not with gradations of importance, but rather with concentric circles that coexist in the halachic system and allow it to preserve its formal character without strangling religious feelings and emotions, right? And again, I didn't give you the whole thing, but the Rav elsewhere explains, as I said, that that's how he, once you've set this theory up, that's why he thinks that even though the Maisa HaMitzvah of Avilut only takes effect, according to Gemara Pesachim, when? During the day. Nevertheless, the Avilut is Batil starting at the night because the Kiyum of the Mitzvah already begins at night, right? The idea that you're supposed to be happy takes place already at night. Okay, so, right, so that is the Rav's thesis, and he uses it to express in many, many places. Now, some people take this, you know, you can take this to very radical extremes if you really wanted to. Right, so I remember when I was in YU and I was learning Hilchot Avelos, so one of the things you'll see if you ever learn Hilchot Avelos is that we often do the exact opposite of what it says in the Gemara, and we do many things that don't exist in the Gemara. Like a million things. Yeah, like this is just one of the cases where the minhag diverges from the Gemara like 180 degrees. No, not just that. I mean, in Avelot. So, like, the things people know about Avelot, which is like, oh, you can't listen to music. There's no source for that, right? You have to cover the mirrors. That appears like 200 years ago, right? And then the things that do appear in the Gemara, like covering your mouth and overturning your bed and... Yeah. Like the way you you put on the atifa, and like, you know. Wow. Again, like I said, right? Or in terms of like tearing kriya, like all these things, so many things that we do are very late, and things that the Gemara says we don't do, like, or sitting Shiva in the presence of someone you're related to who is mourning, right? So the Gemara brings up, like, if you, like, if a child, right? So let's say Yitzhak is sitting Shiva for Avram, okay? And Yaakov, so Yaakov doesn't have to sit Shiva, right? But according to the Gemara, if Yaakov is in the room with Yitzhak, then he sits Shiva. No, like while he's in the room, he has to act like he's sitting Shiva. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Yes, we got this. So Avram dies, Yitzchak is sitting Shiva. Yaakov is the grandchild. He's not Chayv and Avelut. But according to the Gemara, if he's in the room with Yitzchak, then he does sit Shiva. No, no, no. I was doing Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, so you got this, right? Three generations. Yes? Right? The Ramah says that if you do it, Eino Elam Minamatmian, which basically is you're a Kaifer. The Gemara says you have to do it. You're a heretic. Right? What you did is astonishing. It's shocking. We don't do that. Right? The Gemara says do it. Yes. So, I remember... I remember I asked a few of the Rosh Yeshiva and, like, senior staff and why, because I was so bothered by the fact that in Avelos, this is like every halacha is like that. So, I asked one Rosh Yeshiva who said, oh, the Acharonim solve it all. I asked two Rosh Yeshiva told me, I agree with you. He's like, I don't know. I don't understand the entire... Two Rosh Yeshiva told me, I do not understand Avelos at all. I just don't get it. I just don't get how we do that. But I talked to Rabbi Blau, who's the Mashgiach, and he said, what's the problem? The Rav already said, Avelut is about Kiyum Balev, and therefore it is a more amorphous type of halacha. Right? The formal actions actually mean less. Yeah, so that was really, I found that very shocking. But he took it very extreme. He said, look, if you think it's really about the Kiyum Balev, so maybe the formalities actually are more malleable.
So you should be able to do whatever the heck you want, then.
No, that's real.
Back to the Gemara.
It is, except that the Gemara says, when do you rip the clothing? When you hear the news. When do most people rip? At the funeral. Right, okay. So, even that. And
well,
it says that you...
Yeah,
you do, actually. But okay, that's the point. Yes, that is the whole point. That is literally the whole point. Okay, so now I want to show you a very fascinating little piece of love this year. So look at the Gilyonei Ashas, which I guess I did not put a number on, okay? The one between 3 and 4, right? What? So Gilyonei Ashas is Yosef Engel. He says, he brings this fascinating truth of the Halacha Ketana. To save space, I just gave you his treatment of it. He says, look in the Halacha Ketana. That's Rav Yaakov Chagiz. Chelek Besim Reish Mam Chet. This was the Shaila he got. B'misha Ein Lo Yayin. Let's say you don't have wine. Okay? Hayatir rak yayin Arla o Kilaya Kerem. And the only wine you have is from Arla or Kilayim. So it's usher to eat. He asked, are you allowed to drink the wine? Why? I ati ase de simcha yom tov vidachi lo tase. Because we have a normal mitzvah, which is a normal principle, which is ati ase vidachi lo tase, that a positive commandment can override a negative commandment. So can, if the only wine you have is usher, can you drink it? So what would you tell me?
Yes.
Why? Why yes? Halacha Ketana entertains the possibility yes, but why would you say that?
Because
so you could just say, listen, you have a positive mitzvah, right? What does that assume, though, about the nature of the positive mitzvah? Yes, that is a formal action to drink wine, and therefore, if the only way for me to drink wine is to drink the usher wine, so then maybe it'd be mutter. Now, you have to get into the whole sugya of ati asei v'dachi lo tasei, which I don't want to do, but you can at least entertain such a svara. Push back on it now. Why would you not say that? Give me two ways of pushing back on it.
Maybe it's not the act. Maybe it's the thing.
So either say it's not the act at all, or it is an act, but it's subjective, right? So another nafkin to this question of is Avelut about a formal set of actions, or either subjective actions or the emotional state, is could you even entertain the possibility that ati aseh v'dachi lo taseh make sense here? So if you think that the mitzvah is to drink wine, to perform certain formal actions, and the formal action now is wine, so then could be. But if you think the actions are subjective, or you think the actions are not important at all, it's a means by which you bring about the emotional state, then could you even entertain the possibility that Atiyah applies here? No. So that's what the Golion Rishav says himself. He says, "V'chidushai katavti." The simchat yom tov einena b'davar prati kiyayin. The mitzvah isn't about a specific thing like wine. V'chadomer. Rak he mitzvah klalit b'nefesh. So which direction does he take? Is it about subjective actions or is it about the emotional state? Right. It's about being in your heart. Shetei smicha. So if you have wine, you don't drink it. By the way, I was very mocked at every meal in Rosh Hashanah to drink wine. I was like, oh, I'm learning this again. I have to remember to make sure to drink wine, which doesn't always happen. At night, I'll always have wine in Yom Tov. But sometimes a day, I won't, because since I'm mocked, but not to wash, I'm not to make Kiddush until I wash. So in Rosh Hashanah, that means that I've been up for many, many hours not having eaten anything. Right? If I start then with Kiddush with wine, it's not great for me, right? So I will make Kiddush and grape juice, then I'll have wine during the meal, as opposed to Friday night, where or Yom Tov night, where I'll always have wine. It's not. So I will make sure I have wine during the meal. So he's advantage. So he says, if you have wine, you don't drink it. Since wine makes you happier, since you choose not to have the wine, so that shows you're not really happy. And that's what we mean, it's a mitzvah. But if the only reason you're not drinking the wine is because it's arla, it's like you don't have wine. And then how do you do the mitzvah? By being happy.
About simcha v'alev, but if you can do the simcha with your actions.
Ah, very good. Right, so he starts over thinking emotional. Right, if I read the first half, I would say, what does he think the lumdus is? Mm-hmm. It's emotional. But then Kobe notes that he then quickly transitions into saying, not quite. It's to do subjective actions that lead you to the emotional state.
Meaning, it tells you that you're not happy if you don't do the
correct action. Meaning there is some action component, right? It's not quite do subjective actions, but it's don't not do the things that would make you happy, right? And he proves this idea of the importance of subjective actions from two pieces in the Urayim. So look at number 4 and 5. The Urayim seems to be of the position that it's about subjective acts, but not only here. The Urayim seems to have a coherent theory of this in general. So if you look at number 4, Simcha b'sholosh regalim, the Urayim is realizer of Metz, one of the Balei Tosfot. Lamadnu mikan, what do we learn from this? Shekol simcha hari'uya la'adam l'chol davar emisamcho. Anything that makes you happy, chayav lasav rega, whatever makes you happy, do it. L'chol davar sheliba mosebo simcha, anything your heart finds as happiness, do it. V'korat ruach, if it makes you calm, ba'achila v'shtiyah v'chol davar shesameach, shesimcha ilo, chayav lasav rega. G'shem shechayav l'sameach atzmo, kach chayav l'sameach b'nav v'neveto d'chtiv v'samach l'v'chagecha. Whatever makes you happy, you do. Whatever makes your kids happy, you do. Whatever makes your wife happy, you do. But it happens to be the Urayim doesn't really think about this here. So if you look at number 5, the Urayim actually thinks it's a mitzvah d'oraita to make your wife happy the first year of marriage, v'samach et ishto. Right? That's why you go back from war. How does he formulate the formal mitzvah, make your wife happy? Right? Yes, he doesn't say, this is what it means to make. Here is a checklist, right? You must buy flowers before Shabbos. But my wife hates flowers. She's allergic to them. Too bad. You must check off the box, right? Right? He says, no, Samech Kala. Lamanu Shemeshana Rishonan, the first year, Shemeshana Adam and Ishto, Chayav Lisamcha. You have to make your wife happy in the first year after marriage. Dichtiv Naki Yalaveto. That's why we let you out of the war. The simach and ishto. What does it mean? Behold, varim shuhu yodesh yish la simcha. Anything that makes your wife happy, and that's why we send you out from war, right? So the first half of the Gilyon Hashas, he focuses seeming on the emotional, right? But then he brings in the Urayim, where it seems that he goes on the subjective action. But as we said, the line between saying there's a mitzvah to do subjective actions or saying that it's about the emotions, it starts to. Right? To blur, right? Because if you say you have to do something that make you happy, but fundamentally it's about making you happy, and therefore the action is whatever makes you happy, right? So then you'd have to, so then you could start wondering, well, what if it makes me happy to sit and think, right? Oh, is that a misa, right? Like I had a professor like this. Right? Ginsburg also had him. He's like the most like stereotype of a philosopher that you can ever think of, ever.
It's happy misa.
Oh, yeah. So he used to live on like some island off of Long Island and come by train to the Heights, which if you know anything about New York is like, what, 3 hours? Like he lived like off those islands. Yes. Like that area. Yeah, Bidyuk, like Montauk area. And he used to come by train to Washington Heights. Yes, like 3 hours, right, to get from there. What? Yeah, to Penn Station, they have to take a subway up to, yeah. And so when I asked him, so what do you do on the train? And he said, I ponder. Right, I ponder. Like, he literally, he's like a deeply religious Christian, and he didn't realize 1 year that YU doesn't have class on Christmas because of all the, you know, teachers who aren't Christian. But he didn't realize it. But for him, philosophizing was like a religious cue. So he walked. He didn't have a car. He walked. At that point, he lived in Riverdale taking care of his mother. He walked in the snow from Riverdale to YU to teach philosophy, only to realize it wasn't class and walk back. Like, he's very from. What?
He's a from.
What? I think it was because of the snowstorm. Like, it was a terrible, or maybe there wasn't. Maybe there was class on Christmas, and there wasn't because it was a snowstorm. I don't know what it was. It wasn't my time. It was before my time. These are the stories you told them.
Maybe he wanted to ponder more.
Yeah. So like, if you're like that, you're like Professor Johnson. He's amazing. He's so much fun.
What is the religious?
He is so from. You have no idea. He is so from. No. I don't even mean that. No, you don't understand.
What was Midwestern?
No. He like from. Like, he caught someone cheating in his class once, and another professor told me, a Jewish professor told me that he came over to him and he said, "I don't understand. How can these students cheat? Aren't they theists? Don't they believe that someone is watching them?" Like, he is really like from. Like, you have no idea. From. Yeah, no, I took an advanced seminar with him on miracles and the philosophy of miracles, where he started off the class by saying that he was doing this because you all believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and we know that the Bible is predicated so much on miracles, and we must therefore defend, the Bible from the attacks of Yom Yamashima, you know, like that type of thing, right? They didn't say much, but everything else he did.
Why don't you just become Jewish at that point?
Because he's Christian.
I know.
Because he's Christian. He's very, very, you know.
Sure, he has a way of like understanding like how like
he
like,
wrote. He wrote
was a, like not a false prophet.
Correct. He has a book on explaining Christianity philosophically.
That'd be interesting to read.
Yes, including his own version of the ontological argument.
Wow.
Yes. He's very interesting. That one, truth. I think that one was true. So the one in miracles is Hume, Holism, and Miracles. But I think the other one was Truth Without Paradox. Yeah, Truth Without Paradox.
That's a
catchy. Yeah. Anyways, so.
What? I don't know. He likes teaching at YU. It was fun.
Oh yeah,
he had a
train ride every day.
Did he?
He was great. What do you mean? He was great. What? No, great classes. It was so much fun though. So funny. Okay.
Did you have any classes on Christian theology?
What?
Have any classes on Christian
theology? No, he worships logic.
Good for him.
Wow. Yes, he told me that he likes logic and rigor. That are the two things he likes most in the world. So at some point, YU started doing like these interdisciplinary classes. And he doesn't like interdisciplinary things, so they made him give one. So he's like, okay, I will give a class on arguments, because arguments are interdisciplinary. And then he's like, he told me this in his office once, he's like, so they told me to give one argument, so I then found the 5 hardest arguments in all disciplines, and that is what we are going to study for the semester. So it was, I think, like the ontological argument, Gödel's proof, the theory of relativity. Like, he took just 5 arguments and that was, yes, they're like 5 things in the whole semester. That is what he did. He's like very, it was a very intense guy. I'm aware, thank you. I did not take this course. This is, I was at the end of my time in YU and I don't think I would have taken it. I was a little scared by this.
You still teaching there?
Yeah. I think so. I'm not actually sure. Okay, good. So that is a little bit more on subjective actions, where it appears elsewhere, the idea of Kiyum Balev. Really, I should spend more time on this, but because I told Mordechai that I would get to the second half of the sugya, which is the division of Chatzi Lechem, Chatzi Lashem, we're going to have to rush through in the last 2 days.
All right.
whatever. If we have to have longer shirim, we will. But that's the sugya on Samchet. The benefit is at least I gave that as a shir in Toronto. So like my source sheets are like meant for like hour long shirim where people aren't preparing. There isn't. It was my lambda shir on Thursday night where, but it wasn't meant for people with preparation. So my makar sheet are already sort of like cut down in a much more like, you know.
You came down that short.
What?
You came down that short.
I think we still might have spent a month on it, but like it was meaning like four weeks, but with no hachana. So it's different. Right, so like I think we can cover it. Maybe we'll do a little bit longer share and cover it. But I want to throw out the last part of it here, and that is the question of the third part of the simcha, and that is the contextualization. So I keep bringing up this idea of contextualization, right? Of spiritual contextualization, living in Hashem. The Rav used to point to this last source here, number three, right, where the Ramban says as follows: Va'al kol panim yom rishahalo ze'atzmo mukdam leDavid. He says Hallel. He thinks, in principle, Hallel preceded David, right? The idea of Hallel. V'nirami divrehem shumina Torah. He actually thinks saying Hallel is d'oraita, according to Bahag. K'mo shevei rashti, v'yelachol moshe misinai, osho b'chal simcha shesavei nuba. And then he says, I have two possibilities. How could Hallel be mina Torah? What's the pasuk? So he has two possibilities. Either it's a halachol moshe misinai, but what's the second possibility? The mitzvah of Hallel on Yom Tov is part of the mitzvah of simcha. He quotes the pasuk, right, where we talk about blowing, right, trumpets and shofarot, and ikra shira b'peh, and he says the primary part of song is singing, uchli, and instruments, levasume kalahu, right, are to make your voice more beautiful. V'instavenu b'simcha d'ashir la karban. And he says, you're supposed to sing by the karban, but if you don't have a karban, then what should you do? Still sing. Etc. So what does he say? So then he quotes the Gemara. How do you, the Gemara in Erechin says, how do you know that the primary mitzvah of Shira comes from the Torah? Mehacha. From the Torah's pasuk, Tachna shalavata Hashem Elokecha v'simcha v'tov leivav. That we're critiqued in the Tochacha for not serving God with joy. So, Ezu Yavoda Shiva Simcha V'Tov Levav. What is the Avoda that has joy? Heavy Omer Zushira. It's song. Imkein Efsharshin Yidrosh B'Yamim Tovim Shekatuv B'Simcha. So, if that's the case, then when it says Simcha on Yom Tov, V'Nitrabu Kol Nei Minismachot Shdei Ashira Michlalam, which means that among the Simcha you're supposed to have is song. What does that show? Right now, Shira. So Shira, but what does Shira mean in context in the Karban? Not just Stam Shira. What is it? Shira l'Hashem. Right? So what I would add here is that it's not just the emotional, it's not just the actions and the subjective action, the emotional component question. Right? The other thing that I think you have to keep in mind, as I talked about, is the Lifnei Hashem. Right? Is that what the Ramban does is gives us a language to say, how could Simcha be Lifnei Hashem without Karban? And according to Ramban, the answer, I think, is that part of the Simcha is that you're supposed to contextualize Lifnei Hashem. For the Ramban, the answer is with Shira. I mean, you could come up with others, Difrei Torah, I don't know, right? And the like. But I think that's the last component that we're going to get to before we move to Chatzil Hashem, Chatzil Lachem. Because I needed to introduce this because next week when we get to the second half of the Sugya on Samachet, which is that you're supposed to divide your day Chatzil Hashem, Chatzil Lachem, where does the idea that Simcha has this God component? It's not just about being happy. Well, the answer is that the original Simcha was what? Karban, which is clearly Lifnei Hashem. And what the Ramban is adding is that even without Karban, there seems to be an intrinsic part of the mitzvah, which is that, right, contextualization through joy, right? So we've seen now a lot. We've seen objective actions, subjective actions, the role of emotions in the mitzvah. We've talked about meat, we've talked about wine, we've talked about women, we've talked about kids, right? And now we talked about velut and when the difference between night and day. If you remember, we already saw Rav Moshe Sternbach who did suggest this contextualization approach, right? But in explanation of the karban, right? The idea that ikra mitzvah simcha u'shituf ruchniot v'gashmiot. Remember we saw that? The reason for him, the primary mitzvah is karban is because simcha is supposed to be that synthesis of spiritual and physical, right? And the Ramban is giving you,
So where does the Ramban call that the Simpa is? Is it within the action, or is it just that the action contextualizes?
So I don't know if it contextualizes the actions, or you could say it within actions, right? You could take this and say contextualize the actions or contextualize the emotions, right? You could take it either way, right? The Ramban, I think you could go either way. I mean, Shira seems to be a formal act, but is that because what exactly it is? I think you could go through the same lumdus that we did. I will just add that Nissen Karelitz has it in his Sefer Chutshani. He divides Simcha into, right, two, like the Rav, into two actions, right? To do acts of Maisa Simcha and to be happy. The Gra used to say, I'm just reading you now from Olamot, some of their summary in Achronim that I think just flesh it out, that the Gra apparently used to say that the hardest mitzvah is, and this goes back to Avi's point, is to be happy, right? Because the Gra felt that you had to be happy continuously throughout the whole Chag. Right, so if you really take this to an extreme, it really is hard. Exactly. Rav Aryeh Pomeranchik in the Emek Bracha, though, adds a third level, right? And this is based on Ramban. And he says, right, there's three mitzvot. There's Simcha Vatov, right? There's the acts of Simcha. There's Simcha Halev. And then there's Simcha Sheyesh Bashira. Right? He thinks that if you take the Ramban, you could actually argue that there's three levels to this mitzvah. Apparently, the Chazon Ish took this so seriously that he thought that there was a mitzvah to sing basically at every meal lichvod Yom Tov. And of course, right, if you really take the Ramban seriously, that essential to this mitzvah is this idea of contextualization through Shira. That does make a lot of sense. Yeah, let me see if there's any other points I want to make here. We dealt with the question of whether there's any mitzvah of meat bezman hazeh, right? We did that all the way at the beginning, right? Yes. We did that. We dealt with... right. So I've mentioned this before, but then again, is there simchan cholomoed? There does seem to be at some level, and that is why we saw that Rabbi Yashar was makbe that you're supposed to have wine at every, even cholomoed meal, or every day of cholomoed. And many of the poskim do take the idea that at least either as the primary mitzvah or as the secondary mitzvah, either because of the subjective action theory or the kiyum balev theory, that anything you do on Yom Tov that makes you happier is clearly at least some part of the mitzvah. And therefore, for example, Reb Vosner says that even buying flowers, if that makes you happy, is going to be part of it, or dancing, or going on tiyulim on Chol HaMoed. Any of the things that actually make you happy, the more you go in the direction of subjective actions or the kiyum balev, the more you plausibly say, the more you go in that direction, it will be a kiyum balev. Some of the poskim wonder about, can you fulfill it by giving someone a sefer? Can you give them a new cell phone? Right, poskim have all types of interesting distinctions that hang on this analysis. But we'll leave this here for now. We haven't finished the sugya, let's say, but whatever we've done, I think we've understood the sugya quite well. And then, like I said, Sunday, Monday, we only have 2 days, so we might have to a little longer shir. What we'll do is go daf samachet, where the Gemara brings the machloket Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, which is all this true, or do you need to divide the day half and half, half for God, half for you, or can you choose either do it for God or for you? Simcha, yes. And that's a different sugya, and we're going to have to figure out how that sugya relates to the sugya we've been seeing on Kuftet. So I will give you those makarot for Sunday and Monday, and hopefully we will wrap it up before Yom Kippur. Yes. Yeah.